morning, I just want to provide us a brief overview of some of the coccinellids that have been major players in biological control of hemopterans. Spend a little time talking about just a quick overview of some of the evaluation techniques, and then use a couple of examples from my co-authors who have worked with the cotton aphid and soybean aphid to demonstrate some of the ways in which the role of lady beetles in biological control of hemopteran has been demonstrated. Certainly we just had two talks about phylogeny and relationships of the lady beetles. Obviously, when you start looking at lady beetles and looking at hemopterans, it's really important to understand the relationships between the beetles, the predator-prey relationships, and how those phylogenies interact. So it's critical for this type of work that we just heard about to continue so we have a better understanding of what we're doing with these beetles for biological control. All of you can think of different examples, both historical examples as well as fairly recent examples of lady beetles that have been used for biological control or suppression of some of the major groups of hemopteran pests. Starting with the Vidalia beetle, going up through hemlock woolly adelgid, current projects, the soybean aphid, which we'll talk more about. So it's not just historical, it's not just the lady beetle fantasy that happened in the late 1800s and early 1900s. They continue to be major important predators in biological control of hemopterans. Certainly if you start looking at the literature and just doing some quick little bit of survey with keywords in some of our abstracts, you can see that this is and continues to be a very active group, a very active area of research. If you just do some keyword searching in a couple of the major abstracts, you'll find lots and lots of papers. Obviously, you'd have to go in and look at these relative to what the specifics are, but in terms of an active field relative to biological control, the lady beetles continue to be one of the major predatory groups involved in suppressing some of these key pests. Just a quick examples of some of the ways in which we try to determine the role of biological control of lady beetles in biological control. These sort of categories are taken from the review article by Bob Luck. If you look at that review article from 1988, there's about 11 examples of lady beetles that are being evaluated for biological control through a variety of means. Certainly from the perspective of classical biological control, introducing a predatory insect, following it over time, the Vidalia beetle, cottony cushion scale, an excellent example of how that was followed over time, even though the actual mechanisms of what was going on with that interaction weren't really studied till much later in the 60s and 70s by Paul DeBock and his students. But long-term suppression brought about through introductions, certainly a very strong methodology for use to evaluate the impact of lady beetles. A variety of exclusion, inclusion, cage types of studies, use of chemical exclusion, anything you can think of that continues historically, that's been widely used, it continues to be used, it continues to provide a number of important insights into their impact. Gut content analysis methods, a range of things. We're going to hear more about molecular techniques later on. I'll just use a couple of examples from the work that James Harwood has been doing with a soybean aphid. But lady beetles are large enough. There are studies in terms of gut dissections that started in the 1880s with Stephen Forbes doing dissections of carabids and lady beetles to determine what they fed upon. And they continue up to the present, where studies in Germany in the 1999 by Tillich did a very elegant study of what lady beetles had fed upon based on what they could determine from aphid parts or thrip parts in their guts. I know one of Ted Evans' students is continuing to work on gut analysis or fecal analysis of what these predators have preyed upon. And certainly because of their larger size, many individuals are able to do visual observations of what insects have been preyed upon. Alejandro Costamanga has done a very nice study with soybean aphids looking at some of the lady beetle predators on levels of predation because of the size, and you can make observations of those insects. just to give you a little idea of what the sort of the value of doing some gut content analysis, either with immunological or molecular techniques, these to me would be combined with other sorts of either field cage studies or field observations, visual methodology. It does allow you to take samples from the field, so you have field populations. You're not trying to manipulate those populations in cages or do other things that that introduce some level of artificial means of human manipulation. And they certainly provide you with additional ecological insights relative to the role of alternate prey, biodiversity, that you can't get probably any other way. So I think it's a really a good additional tool to add to what we're able to understand the interactions of lady beetles. James Harwood put together a paper in 2005 looking at studies that have used gut content analysis for aphid predators. You can see where the arrow is. There's been about 20 studies up till 2005. There's been a couple additional studies. The majority of those studies with lady beetles have involved gut dissections, two or three immunological studies, and only a couple of studies that use DNA fragments to determine predation. If you look across the taxa there, is it the reason that these gut analysis are not more widely used due to the biology of the taxa or due to the emphasis and the focus of the groups who are looking at these taxa? It might be a combination of both based on their predatory behaviors. The couple case studies that I want to just mention, these are based on the work that my co-authors have done. One involves the cotton aphid, and that's Tim Kring and his workers in Arkansas, and the other is a soybean aphid, which would be James Harwood and Bob O'Neill from Kentucky and Indiana. First, the cotton aphid. Depending on where you are in the country, the cotton aphid can be considered an occasional pest. Every so often, different locations, it does pop up as a problem. In other locations in Arkansas, it may not be a problem from year to year. Other locations of the country, this may be occurring in cotton, have non-pest status, and in fact, some people have looked at it as potentially a beneficial insect because it allows the buildup of predators in that particular system. So cotton aphid, the importance of the cotton aphid varies geographically. What Tim did in terms of a combined research extension group at the University of Arkansas looked at how they could incorporate biotic mortality brought about by lady beetles into existing thresholds for the cotton aphid in Arkansas. This just gives you an example, pictorial example of some of the predators that are using cotton aphids in Arkansas to build up their populations. You look at the little the diagram, you see about 3/4 of all the predators found in cotton, feeding on cotton aphids, are lady beetles, a combination of different species, adults and larvae. And this data set was based on a 3-year field study where they're out doing weekly samplings of both of aphids and the various predators feeding on those aphids. The existing threshold in Arkansas was related to the number of plants that were infested and whether or not the aphid population was increasing. What Tim Kring and his colleagues did was use that existing threshold and just build on it by adding in, you know, not only are there plants infested and are the aphid populations building, but are there a number of lady beetle larvae and adults per row foot? And if there's not the lady beetles present, then you can treat. If there are, you wait 7 days and sample again. So this allows that biotic mortality to be incorporated into the threshold, takes an existing threshold, just adds the presence of these relatively large insects that are easy to see. Obviously, you don't have scouts looking for skimness in the field. They wouldn't see them, but they will see Hippodamia convergens and the 7-spotted lady beetle. So this particular example shows that you can use an existing threshold, incorporate biotic mortality due to the predators, eliminating some insecticide sprays depending on the year and the conditions, delays that first treatment, this particular threshold, which incorporates these predators, has been adopted by about 70% of the growers in Arkansas. So evaluated the mortality, incorporated the mortality, and now it's being used. Let's move on to the soybean aphid. Certainly, most people realize what an impact the soybean aphid has had in Midwest soybean production. And it involves currently now, there's a number of different projects ongoing involving importation of parasitoids, looking at what the existing predators are doing, plant resistance, pathogens, a whole range of different approaches are being used for the soybean aphid. I'm just going to focus on some of the lady beetle work. There's been numerous studies. You look at the literature, very recent studies from a number of labs throughout the Midwest looking at the roles of the aphid predators that are in the field, including the work from Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana. I just put up a couple of examples of the types of studies that have been done both in the field, field cages, and lab studies. And Alejandro Castamano has done some field observations where they're not caged, the beetles and the aphids aren't caged in anything. There is variation in the complex. That's supposed to be, when on my computer, when you go for a picture of aureus, Bob O'Neill shows up. So I don't know why. He doesn't, I don't know if he looks like aureus or there's a giant sucking sound, but you know. There is variation in the complex depending on what state, what area you're in, what you're looking at. Wisconsin, they found quite a number of predatory dipteran larvae having an important role in reducing aphid populations. Certainly in Indiana, Bob has focused a lot on the early season predation by aureus and how important that is for suppressing building populations of the soybean aphid. But in all these situations, in all locations, the lady beetle larvae and adults are playing a role, and in many cases a major role, in suppressing the soybean aphid. In Michigan, for example, recent work has looked at these four species as being the major predators found in the soybean aphid system. And you look at the Harmonia, Hippodamia, and Coccinella species, those are all introduced species, and there's only one native species that's showing up in this sort of predatory complex. This group represents almost 60% of all the predators in a study done in Michigan. And you can see Harmonia axeritas, which has some evolutionary history with the soybean aphid in Asia, is showing up both as the most common adult as well as a very significant proportion of the immature stages. So where are our Nearctic species? Historically, if you look at examples of aphid pests that have been introduced into North America, what typically happens is our native species colonizes those agricultural crops, be it the pea aphid, be it the spotted alfalfa aphid. They move in and bring about some level of aphid suppression that's usually then looked at in terms of what could be added to it. But where are our Nearctic species? Why are we not seeing several species of Coccinella that are the Nearctic species, Hippodamia species? And you know, when I was doing work in New York in the mid-80s, I would have a complex of four or five different species of Coccinella and Hippodamia, and I would also would have expected to see a much higher level of Coleomagilla. At least in the studies in Michigan, it's there, but it's in relatively low levels. So when we look at what the existing biological control of the soybean aphid is, we have both a mixture of native and introduced predators, not only the lady beetles, but if you look at the lady beetles, in most cases, the most abundant or what's been measured as the most significant predators are introduced species. Obviously, okay, you start looking at soybeans. Soybeans are introduced, soybean aphids introduced, soybean overwintering hosts are introduced. So what kind of, when you start looking at the literature and looking at these papers, yes, we're documenting what is naturally occurring predation in these soybean fields, but is that, you know, what sort of a system do we have there? I mean, we've got a system where, is this fortuitous biological control, where classical biological control has been done in reverse, and now we've got the pest there? So it does make you think about what sorts of responses you'll get from these predators relative to what evolutionary history they've had with the pest and with the crop. So it is a very interesting system, and obviously now the focus is on introducing some aphid parasites from Asia, and that's looked at sort of as the classical biological control component. People are looking at fungi and other things, but in terms of the predators that are out there, it's already sort of a very mixed bag of a system. Just another question, there's a fourth species of introduced lady beetle that's sort of in New York, and I know moving across Ohio, and is this going to become even another addition to this complex, which may, you know, again, just emphasize that we've got sort of an introduced system growing in the Midwest, and a number of these sort of introduced lady beetles are now playing major roles in that. When you have this sort of multiple predatory system, you have a number of interactions going on, and just want to use one example from work that James Harwood and Bob O'Neill did that tried to pull apart some of the interactions between some of the predators. And this particular study, it was based in Indiana. Aureus is a major predator early season in Indiana soybean fields, and then Harmonia would move in later on. Bob and his students and postdocs made some observations where they hypothesized that Aureus was in the field early feeding on soybean aphids, but when Harmonia moved into the field, laid some eggs, they were hypothesizing that Aureus may start feeding on the Harmonia eggs and may actually delay the buildup of Harmonia larvae later in the field. So the question sort of based on this sort of seasonal pattern was a good question to use molecular gut analysis, and this particular series of techniques were taking some DNA segments from the soybean aphid and looking at the predation rates of Aureus. So there was documented evidence there about the importance of Aureus. In addition, taking some DNA fragments from Harmonia and looking to see whether or not Aureus from the field was actually feeding on Harmonia. This would be the type of pattern you would see for Harmonia eggs, at least in Indiana in 2005, where you get eggs later in the season, then you get a buildup of eggs and larvae. So the question is, do Aureus feed on these eggs? The answer, based on using molecular techniques, was no. All the Aureus that were collected were tested against Harmonia, and they were not found to be feeding on Harmonia eggs. So just to, I know we'll hear more about this later on, but this is a new technique. It certainly can provide new insights, and it can answer and address questions that we haven't been able to address before, and it certainly complements everything we've been trying to do with field and cage and laboratory studies. And there are certain advantages, and obviously there's certain costs involved in this, but it is a very, I think, powerful tool that we should be looking at maybe a little more closely. Thank you.